The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Derek Frost for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading from the Triangle Business Journal. And we'll start on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal with the cover story headline, Small Towns, Big Dreams. Towns in eastern Wake County are buoyed by the success of Raleigh and towns to the capital cities west and southwest. And the cover story article begins inside the Triangle Business Journal with the second headline, Northeast Wake weighs rapid growth, soaring rise of residential communities has small towns looking at how to balance tax base. And this is written by Kaylee Thompson. Until 5 years ago, the role of a manager of economic development for the town of Roseville didn't exist because the town was too small to need one. But from 2015 to 2022, Roseville's population increased by 113%. In fact, Roseville was the fastest growing North Carolina town between 2010 and 2020 among towns with populations of 5,000 or more, according to U.S. Census data. This rapid growth prompted the town to form a development plan in 2018 that resulted in hiring someone to focus on economic development. That person was Michael McFarlane, who had been with the North Carolina Department of Commerce for 10 years. Before 2015, towns in Northeast Wake County really weren't places people chose to live, let alone visit for entertainment or shopping. But that is changing for Roseville, Knightdale, Wake Forest, Wendell, and Zebulon as people settle in these outskirt towns for more space at a lower price and find an increasing number of reasons to visit. The towns have experienced explosive growth in residents since 2015, with all of them seeing at least a 47% increase in population, according to census data. Both Roseville and Wendell experienced a more than 100% increase. As new neighborhoods have sprouted in what had often been farmland, the towns have brought in more commercial development in an effort to balance their tax bases and raise foot traffic. But all of this increase has created hurdles for the towns to overcome, such as the lack of infrastructure and a core downtown area, along with maintaining affordability. Every town is facing these challenges head-on, using strategies such as updating their comprehensive plans, forming specific committees and departments, updating their unified development ordinances, and developing partnerships. McFarlane, now Roseville's Community and Economic Development Director, says now that the town has transitioned from rural to more suburban, it needs to bring in commercial growth to support its rapid population growth. But because retailers don't typically come to a town until there is a certain amount of people, the town also needs to keep attracting people to move there. Our next step is that is crucial for us is to start to attract a commercial tax base, not only to provide things to do and services for citizens, but also just for that tax base to start paying for the town services and infrastructure and public safety in the future, McFarlane says. Striking a balance. The towns used to be residential heavy with little commercial development. It was where people spent their nights, but not their days. The only exception is Zebulon, which started off as a commercial heavy town, but has seen tremendous growth in residents. Roseville has changed significantly as it historically has been rural with plenty of farmland. When Interstate 540 opened, it made Roseville more accessible, especially to Research Triangle Park. Not only has it almost tripled its population since 2010, but also it started to attract commercial development. But its tax base remains 92% residential and only 8% commercial. It's a similar situation in Wendell, which has had a hard time increasing its commercial tax bases. People are moving to the town faster than commercial businesses can open up. The town has gone from 24% commercial in 2010 to its current 20%. That hasn't changed over time. Even as we grow, it's hard to break that because of national business models and at what point the rooftops justify an appropriate return on investment for non-residential, town manager Mark Collins says. So that's a little beyond our town's control. Wake Forest town manager Kip Paget says some of the commercial growth has happened naturally as the residential side has grown so much so quickly. Wake Forest is Northeast Wake County's largest town with more than 50,000 residents as of June 2022 census data. In 2010, it had only about 30,000 people. In addition, the NC Riot Accelerator program at the Wireless Research Center in Wake Forest has acted as an incubator for technology-focused businesses. They, Riot, R-I-O-T, provide technical support and guidance with the hope that they, the new businesses, continue to grow and get too big for the current Wireless Research Center and leave to their own building, Padgett says. They've had a lot of success with that. Nightdale has always had a fairly strong retail component, but even that has dwindled over the years. Jason Brown, Development Services Director, says the town expects to see more investment in commercial space in the next 2 years. Our elected officials have said we need to meet this tax-based split in order to be able to provide the kinds of services and have the amenities that our residents expect, Brown says. Having a strong commercial tax rate helps to do that without the burden being on individuals. The town looks to attract more mixed-use development so that it can achieve its desired 60% residential and 40% commercial tax base. It currently is 62% residential and 38% commercial. Zebulon has had the opposite problem in that it used to be a mainly a location where people came to work rather than live. In 2010, its commercial tax base was 71%. It now stands at 58%. Planning Director Michael Clark says the daytime population was higher than the town population because of employers such as GlaxoSmithKline and U.S. Foods. In 2020, the town changed zoning to allow for a variety of housing types to try to boost residential developments and incentivize all generations to move to Zebulon. This had a noticeable impact as the residential tax base went from 35% to 42% between 2020 and 2022. The emphasis was no longer on allowing for just one type of housing product in these neighborhoods, but creating neighborhoods that somebody could live in their entire adult life, Clark says, where you have something for everyone, where you have multi-bedroom, larger homes for families, townhomes for recent college graduates or empty nesters, and a wide range of values in housing within the same neighborhood to really create that sense of place. With this increase in commercial businesses and population, each town has had to decide whether to maintain the small town feel or push full steam ahead into growing bigger. Small town charm. All of the towns in Northeast Wake County have made intentional decisions to enhance the small town charm that has drawn people and businesses alike. For several, that means focusing on downtown and parks. Wake Forest has focused on its downtown and establishing a quaint but vibrant atmosphere. This includes holding several festivals throughout the year and providing live music in the spring. Padgett says the town is also improving some of the downtown parks. Nightdale also looks to parks to help create the sense of a small town. Brown says it's important for the town to have park facilities and public gathering places that can help foster and build community. Getting people engaged in recreation and volunteer opportunities is how Zebulon maintains its small town charm. Town manager Joe Moore says the town has been working hard to cultivate a small town life and that it's key to get people involved in volunteer efforts where they work with town departments and community organizations toward a common goal. Wendell has a National Historic District downtown that hosts several special events that Planning Director Brian Coates says have a Norman Rockwell feel to them. The town also focuses on creating a sense of community. We've seen our nonprofits and faith-based communities be very active in food banks and providing for people in our community, Coates says. It's a cool place where a diverse, multi-generational population wraps their arms around each other and protects each other. And you do that when you're a small town, and it's that way by design. Roseville doesn't have a classic downtown area, so McFarland says the town has a project to create a walkable, safe downtown. Roseville Planning Director Meredith Gruber says part of that plan is to keep heights to 3 or 4 stories, along with maintaining open space so that it still looks and feels like a small town rather than giving way to nothing but development. Hurdles to clear. The work that goes into maintaining a small town vibe when rapid growth is occurring isn't the only challenge these towns are facing. Each one is facing infrastructure, town service, and affordability issues. Providing improved roads and new ones along with needed infrastructure is a big factor for Wake Forest, Nightdale, Wendell, and Zebulon. Traffic has become a problem for Wake Forest, and it's working with the North Carolina Department of Transportation to help with some of that. Planning Director Courtney Tanner says the Capitol Boulevard North upgrade that DOT is planning has been delayed, which has caused not only traffic issues but also a slowdown in commercial growth as the town waits to find out the impact on parcels. The upgrade proposes to turn Capitol Boulevard into a controlled access highway from Interstate 540 in Raleigh to Purnell Road, Harris Road in Wake Forest. Nightdale Town Manager Bill Summers says a negative trade-off the town is experiencing for more growth is that people are spending more and more time in their cars. With the increase of people and development spreading out, it's taking longer for people to get from point A to point B. Figuring out how to provide enough services and at the same quality as before as more residents move in is another big challenge for towns such as Wendell, Roseville, and Zebulon. Wendell is faced with the reality that revenue from increased residential and commercial taxes doesn't happen right away. You don't realize that valuation from growth until after it's completed, Colin says. So you have a service demand at that point of occupancy, but you don't have your actual revenue catch up until 4 years later. Roseville's issue with providing services is in its staff. Both McFarland and Gruber say the town doesn't have enough staff to keep up with the growing demand for services, from police to fire to planning to parks. Zebulon is struggling to figure out how to meet the needs of a growing and diversifying community that also keeps them engaged. As towns grow and the demand for housing gets stronger, housing prices and apartment rents rise. Even in these towns on the outskirts of Wake County, affordability has become an issue. Colin says that Wendell is tackling the affordability issue from various angles, such as providing a variety of housing sizes and types, even within the same neighborhood, and using tax credits to develop residential projects and renovate current housing. The town is also having conversations with affordable housing builders about building housing on town-owned land. For Wake Forest, maintaining affordability is the town's biggest challenge, according to Padgett. The town adopted an affordable housing plan, set up a half-penny tax to dedicate to affordable housing projects, and is partnering with nonprofits and developers to provide programs to help people help get people in affordable housing. Affordability is just starting to become a bigger issue in Roseville, so the town is in the beginning stages of managing it. McFarland says the town formed an affordable housing committee that will develop an affordable housing plan. Knightdale is also in the early process, as it hasn't become a big problem for the town yet. Up until about 2020, Knightdale was considered one of the most affordable places to live in North Carolina, according to Brown. The town is working with the UNC Greensboro Urban Studies Unit to develop an inclusive growth plan. Looking at it through the inclusive growth lens to make sure we're looking at mixed-income neighborhoods, mixed-income development, and not being short-sighted in putting affordable housing in places where people will still be required to have an increased transportation cost because it's so far away from things like transit, walkability, employment centers, schools, and services, Brown says. Zebulon doesn't have an affordability issue yet, as it has one of the highest concentrations of naturally occurring affordable housing in Wake County, according to Clark. Because of this, Clark says the town is trying to figure out ways to maintain that even with the growth. This comes through the town ensuring there are opportunities for more residences to be built so the housing supply never gets too low. Moore says the town has an overabundance of single-family houses. In addition, it wants developments to include mixed-income neighborhoods with a variety of housing types to create affordability to a wider range of residents. Looking ahead, the communities of Northeast Wake are working to solve the issues at hand with one eye on the future so they don't continue to be or get worse. Zebulon and Roseville both updated their comprehensive plans to better reflect the vision and design for the future of the town. With its massive growth, Wake Forest has been on a plan-creating kick, with the town recently having updated its land use and historic preservation plans. Wake Forest also has a new transportation plan and its first-ever public transit plan. Roseville has been seeking partnerships with consultants and community organizations to tackle its issue with providing enough services. Wake Forest and Roseville also made changes to their development ordinances to allow for a variety of housing and to help support the change from being mostly rural to more suburban. Zebulon is relying on developers to help create and improve infrastructure as it's built into site plans for new projects. The town is also engaging with people daily to see what programs need to be changed, added, or dropped in order to better deliver services. Wendell is using town funds where it can to help address traffic concerns and is looking at what areas it can get ahead in to help provide needed services despite the lag in revenue. Knightdale has focused on providing different modes of transportation and the necessary infrastructure. The town has also recognized that density will help reduce the amount of time people spend in their cars. It also conducts annual surveys and is being more deliberate in design and plans. While the towns in Northeast Wake County have experienced varied growth and issues, the sentiment of maintaining a small town feel and affordability remains the same across the board. You want to make sure that you have services available to provide not just a roof, but a quality of life, says Collins, the town manager for Wendell. Everybody deserves to have a good quality of life and standard of living. We can do that in a country like America, and we want to make sure we're providing an equity in services, not just in equality in rooftops. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle happenings, written by Dane Huffman, managing editor of the Triangle Business Journal. The first headline, Old Chatham hosts U.S. Open qualifying. One day before the world of golf changed, a Triangle club known for its exquisite course sent five golfers to the U.S. Open at a final qualifying event. On June 5, Old Chatham Golf Club hosted its first professional event, and one that was so successful it will consider more. And all that came a day before the PGA Tour's stunning announcement that it would merge with the Saudi-backed LIV Tour. At Old Chatham, Yudo Katsuragawa of Japan and Patrick Cover of Charlotte led the way with a two-round totals of 12 under par 132. Three players landed at 11 under to qualify: Paul Barjon of France, McClure Meissner of Dallas, and Frankie Kappen of North Oaks, Minnesota. The U.S. Open begins June 15th at the Los Angeles Country Club. Our membership loves it because now we have five guys that qualified at Old Chatham, club president Alan Wilson says. We sort of look at it as our guys going to L.A. Raleigh's Doc Redman, who has caddied at Old Chatham, finished as the second alternate at 135, and Chesson Hadley of Raleigh was among others with local ties who did not make the cut. Hadley shot a 141. Gastonia's Harold Varner III, who plays on the LIV Tour, did not qualify after shooting a 136. Old Chatham, which has 380 members, has hosted other events led by the 2019 U.S. Senior Amateur National Championship. We've always had a big commitment to amateur golf. That's part of our mission, to support amateur golf, Wilson says. But this event here has been such a great publicity, and you have a lot of amateur players who are trying to qualify. It's a way to give back to the game. So, yes, this is something we will consider doing in the future. RDU lands new flight to Orlando. Triangle residents who are fans of Disney World and Universal Studios have a new way to go to visit Mickey Mouse and his friends. JetBlue will launch nonstop service between Orlando and Raleigh-Durham International Airport later this year. The flights to Orlando International Airport begin November 2nd. RDU already has several carriers that fly to Orlando, including Delta, Frontier, and Southwest, with round-trip prices as low as $58 in July. With the new flight, RDU's number of nonstop routes is now well into the 60s as the airport continues to rebound from the pandemic. Federal agency raises issues. The Federal Trade Commission is pushing back on proposed legislation that would shield UNC Health from antitrust scrutiny. In a letter June 5, the agency raised concerns about Senate Bill 743. The Senate unanimously passed the legislation in early May, sending the bill to the House. The legislation would enable UNC Health to enter cooperative agreements with other healthcare providers, including through mergers and acquisitions, quote, without regard to their effect on market competition, unquote. But the FTC argues that this lack of oversight could lead to further healthcare consolidation that ultimately results in higher costs for patients and lower wages for workers. Highwoods makes a move into Fayetteville Street location. Highwoods Properties is taking over the co-working space in its Fayetteville Street building that Industrious used to run. Brian Leary, Highwoods Executive Vice President and Chief Operating Officer, says Industrious's lease was nearing its expiration, and the companies agreed to have Highwoods take over the 27,000-square-foot third-floor space. Skip Hill, Senior Vice President and Raleigh Market Leader, says it will remain a co-working area as the company finds out what the current customers' needs and wants are. In addition, Larry says the company will use the space for events and workshops. The co-working space serves two purposes for Highwoods: a new product for entrepreneurs and small teams, and an amenity to existing customers who might need temporary offices. First tenant opens at Ironworks. Raleigh Ironworks, a major mixed-use project along Atlantic Avenue, has seen its first food and beverage tenant open. Eastcut Sandwich Bar opened in the development's Double Gable building recently. The location is the second for the brand, with the first in Durham. The brand was started by Brad Bankos, a New Jersey native, and Steve Wunsch, a New York native, in 2017. The menu features a variety of sandwiches reminiscent of the pair's upbringing, along with craft beer and wine. The 2,600-square-foot space has an address of 1101 East Whitaker Mill Road. The location features indoor and patio seating. It's a really exciting jump for us to go from a standalone store that is more along the lines of a destination to an energetic, exciting property with office, retail, apartments, and other dining options that align with our customer base, Wunsch says. Our customer base is mainly young professionals and families, and we feel Raleigh Ironworks fits that. And finally, North Carolina continues to age. North Carolina is a growing destination for retirees. The older population in North Carolina is expected to grow at double the rate of the state's overall population, according to Carolina Demography. The population of adults aged 65 to 84 grew 44.1% over the past decade, according to data from the U.S. Census Bureau. In contrast, the population of adults aged 18 to 24 grew at a rate of 4.5%, and the population of adults aged 25 to 64 grew by 6.3%. A decade ago, the share of North Carolina's population that was 65 and over was around 13%, approximately 1 in 7.5 people. By 2021, it had ballooned to 17%. Brunswick, Dare, and Orange County saw the largest population growth of those aged 65 and older, with their share increasing by around 50%. And now we turn to some of the top news stories in the Triangle Business Journal. The first one, written by Zach Ezone. Duke Health cuts 300 jobs as entity realigns operations. One of the largest employers in the Triangle is eliminating nearly 300 positions. Duke Health is cutting jobs as part of a realignment of operations amid a challenging financial environment for hospitals. The move comes a few months after Dr. Craig Albanese stepped into the CEO role for Duke Health, replacing Dr. A. Eugene Washington. The decision follows a months-long review during which the system identified opportunities to right-size and realign the structure of some of its administrative and operational functions. According to a statement attributed to Duke Health officials, the system identified about 280 positions to be eliminated. Duke Health officials say the cuts will primarily come through retirements, redeployments, and closures of vacant positions. The system declined to disclose the types of positions included in this reduction, although officials say fewer than 50 team members in administrative and managerial roles are affected. Duke University Health Systems remains steadfast in its mission to advance the way we deliver care and remain a vital resource to those who come to us for hope, health, and healing, the statement says. According to its website, Duke Health has about 23,463 full-time employees, with more than 11,000 based at the Academic Medical Center in Durham. The reduction follows leadership changes at one of Duke Health's hospitals earlier this year. The system in April disclosed that three executives at Duke Regional Hospital stepped down following a review of the hospital's performance. They were Chief Financial Officer Jonathan Hoy, Chief Nursing Officer Vicky Orto, and Chief Operating Officer Mitch Babb. Duke Health ended its 2022 fiscal year with an operating loss of $151.4 million, according to Fitch Ratings. It isn't the only system this year to make changes focused on driving operational efficiencies. ECU Health announced in January plans to close multiple regional clinics and an inpatient behavioral health unit after recording an operating loss of about $46 million in its previous fiscal year. Hospitals last year faced widespread operational challenges tied to labor and staffing issues, including worker shortages and increasing costs. And our next story is written by Dave Pertell. $700 million development advances by Dix Park. 20-story towers will hold hundreds of apartments in booming area. A two-tower development with hundreds of residential units near Dix Park in Raleigh is moving toward going vertical. Real estate firms SLI Capital of Raleigh and Mack Real Estate Group of New York have secured financing for the first phase of The Weld, a development that's years in the making along Lake Wheeler Road. The $700 million project calls for 1,200 apartments. The first phase will be a 20-story towers holding 675 units with a mix of 1-, 2-, and 3-bedroom apartments that will be market rate. The 3.5-acre site is at the corner of Lake Wheeler Road and Hamill Drive. Site work is underway on phase one with a completion date set for summer 2025. Site plans filed last year showed phase one would total more than 1 million square feet of space. Each building will include a ground-level restaurant and retail space and share a central green space that will serve as a gathering place for residents. The glass-fronted units will offer expansive views of Dix Park. The Weld is a truly pivotal site for Dix Park and will be transformative for the city, says Brian Kane, CEO and managing partner at SLI Capital. With Park City South next door, the Weld will be the front door to Dix Park and provide a direct connection to downtown. In addition, we are collaborating with the Dix Park Conservancy to identify other meaningful ways to support the park's development and expect to announce further details in the fall. Kane is the son of Raleigh developer John Kane, CEO of Kane Realty Corporation, which is behind Park City South. The area around Dix Park is being transformed by large mixed-use developments as Raleigh's southern gateway is reshaped from its industrial roots. The effort to remake the park into a vibrant destination is also moving forward. Auto dealer picks Oxford for expansion. This is written by Lauren Onisorge. An auto dealer is making a large investment in Granville County. Auction Direct USA is creating 173 jobs in Oxford. The company, which operates used vehicle superstores, is planning a new facility at Oxford Industrial Park that will recondition vehicles to sell to both wholesale customers and at Auction Direct locations. The company has a location in Raleigh on Glenwood Avenue and another in Rochester, New York. It also has a service center in Durham. State officials say the firm picked Oxford for the $2.9 million investment over competing sites in Pennsylvania, Georgia, and Maryland. And now we turn to the reporter pages in the Triangle Business Journal, starting with Lauren Onisorge's page on tech and banking. Brooks Bell sues hot California firm. Raleigh company says San Francisco's Heap used trademark name. A David versus Goliath story could be brewing in court as a small company in Raleigh is suing a San Francisco analytics startup, one with a total funding haul of more than $218 million. Tech consulting firm Brooks Bell Interactive is suing Heap Incorporated, a company that has been called an emerging unicorn following a $960 million valuation in 2021. Heap did not immediately respond to a request to comment on the lawsuit, which accuses it of trademark infringement and unfair competition over its use of the brand name Illuminate. Brooks Bell has owned the trademark rights for the use of the Illuminate name in connection with website optimization software and analytics services since 2018, according to the lawsuit. The firm claims Heap was aware of its use of the word as Heap and Brooks Bell had a business relationship dating back to 2017. That relationship deepened in 2020 when the pair discussed a referral and partnership opportunity, and both companies made demos to present their own capabilities. Brooks Bell's Illuminate branded product services were part of the presentation, according to the lawsuit. A partnership was signed between the two firms at the end of 2020 to jointly market the other's products and services, effective January 2021. But when Heap started using the Illuminate brand, it created confusion, the lawsuit says, as suddenly customers started thinking Heap's products were endorsed, sponsored, manufactured, distributed, marketed, or sold by Brooks Bell, which they are not. Brooks Bell claims it never authorized, permitted, or licensed Heap to use any variation of any of the Illuminate mark. Without restraint by the court, Heap will continue to use the mark, causing irreparable harm to Brooks Bell, the lawsuit filed by attorneys Devin White and Charles George of Wyrick Robbins, Yates & Potten states. Heap has not responded to the lawsuit in court and did not have an attorney listed. Both companies continue to advertise products under the Illuminate brand. Top NC banking officials wary of industry's underlying problems. Top North Carolina officials are dismissing claims of a crisis in the financial industry, but they say challenges must be addressed. Commissioner of Banks Catherine Boskin and Treasurer Dale Folwell spoke during the recent State Banking Commission meeting in Raleigh. They said that prior to the recent bank failures, the challenges were already numerous. Boskin's office has identified multiple risks and issues, from fintech competition to cryptocurrencies to a dearth of new banks. While those line items are still there, scrutiny of concentrations on both sides of the balance sheet is front and center, as are capital levels and how to address modern bank runs, she said. The bank runs have meant pressure on the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, which will backfill its insurance deposit fund. Right now, it's expected to happen on the backs of institutions greater than $5 billion. Folwell, who also chairs the commission, described it as a hellish several weeks, but said the North Carolina Commissioner of Banks office has navigated them expertly. And finally, First Citizens to raise North Hills building. Driving through North Hills will soon look different. First Citizens Bank revealed plans to demolish a 50-year-old office building at 16 East Rowan Drive in Raleigh. The bank declined to say what was planned for the 2.1-acre property. Kirk Duncan, Executive Director of Corporate Real Estate for First Citizens, says the Raleigh Bank is evaluating how we might use it in the future. The building was originally occupied by the Raleigh Savings and Loan Association. Property records show. Now we turn to the On Healthcare and Higher Ed page, written by Zach Ezone. Struggling biotech will be acquired. Private equity firm will take over Greenlight Biosciences. More than a year after hitting the public markets, a biotech with operations in Research Triangle Park is transitioning to a private company. A consortium led by private equity firm Fall Line Capital is acquiring Greenlight Biosciences in an all-cash transaction valuing the biotech at around $45.5 million. The deal will return Greenlight to a private company after it went public in February 2022 through a merger with a special purpose acquisition company. Fall Line and its affiliates have agreed to acquire all outstanding shares of Greenlight's common stock, other than certain excluded shares, for 30 cents per share. The offer represents a 50% premium to the company's closing stock price on May 26. Greenlight shareholders who hold 80% of the company's shares have agreed to exchange their shares for preferred stock of a new holding company that will own Greenlight upon the closing of the deal. Under the terms of the agreement, Greenlight has 30 days to solicit alternative acquisition proposals from other parties. In March, Greenlight confirmed it had received interest from Fall Line Capital, which is based in California, on a potential deal. Greenlight's board of directors unanimously approved the transaction, which is expected to close in the third quarter of this year. Greenlight is headquartered near Boston and focused on developing ribonucleic acid, or RNA, technology for products in humans and plant health. The company last year expanded its footprint in Research Triangle Park to 63,000 square feet of lab, office, and greenhouse space off Davis Drive to support its plant health pipeline. The company has two potential plant health products under review by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. But Greenlight, like other biotechs, has faced financial challenges over the past year. The company on May 31 disclosed its plans to cut headcount by 51% to extend its cash runway, according to a filing with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission. This followed a 25% workforce reduction in October as part of a broader realignment of the company's operations. Durham Biopharma names leaders after CEO's death. A biopharmaceutical company in Durham is changing its leadership team following the death of its CEO. Arami Therapeutics, and that's spelled A-E-R-A-M-I, has expanded its management team through three appointments, one of which marks an internal promotion. The change comes as it advances towards a phase two study of its lead asset in the wake of the death of CEO Lisa Marie Yanez in a car crash in early May. Arami appointed Joshua Zeal as its chief operating officer and interim CEO. Zeal joined Arami about a year ago as vice president for program development and worked closely with Yanez on the firm's clinical plans, which includes the recent completion of a phase one study. Joining Zeal on the expanded management team is chief medical officer Gary Burgess and Sarah Fritchley, Arami's senior vice president for clinical development and operations. This new team will oversee Arami's initiation of a phase two trial for its lead asset, a potential treatment for patients with pulmonary arterial hypertension and pulmonary hypertension associated with interstitial lung disease, or PH-ILD. And finally, Durham firm secures FDA approval. Following years of development, a Durham firm is transitioning to a commercial stage company. In late December, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration granted approval for Polarian Imaging's drug device combination product called XenoView, that's X-E-N-O-V-I-E-W. After a decade in development, the company is rolling out the commercial launch of its technology with the hopes of improving care for patients with lung diseases. The FDA approved XenoView for use with magnetic resonance imaging, or MRI, for evaluation of lung ventilation in adults and pediatric patients aged 12 years and older. The product includes both a system, a piece of capital equipment, and a xenon gas blend that patients inhale prior to an MRI. And now we turn to the On Retail and Restaurants page, written by Laura Brumette. PGA Superstore to open soon in Midtown. Store near Wegmans will sell golf, tennis products, and more. PGA Tour Superstore, a specialty retailer selling golf, tennis, and pickleball equipment and apparel, is set to open July 8 near Wegmans in Midtown Raleigh. The store fills nearly 30,000 square feet and features hitting bays and golf simulators along with retail merchandise from the top brands in golf. The Raleigh location will be just the second for the brand in North Carolina. A store opened in Charlotte last year. The brand is operated by Golf and Tennis Pro Shop Incorporated, a subsidiary of AMB Sports and Entertainment. The stores are the exclusive off-course and off-airport North American retail partner of the PGA Tour. The Raleigh store will include four hitting bays designed for groups to play together. There will also be four additional simulators, an 1,100-square-foot putting green, custom club fitting, and lessons available from certified teaching professionals. The new store is located at 601 East Six Forks Road in the Midtown Corner Shopping Center. PGA Superstore will be an anchoring tenant beside UNC Health. The center is adjacent to the Midtown East Shopping Center, home to Wegmans, Crumble Cookies, and BB's Crispy Chicken, and the Holly Park Shopping Center, home to Trader Joe's and Jerry's Artorama. Midtown Corner is owned by Ram Realty Services. Our customer experience mentality is unmatched in the golf specialty retail business. Combine that with our professional expertise, interactive environment, and everything needed to play, we inspire beginners to avid golfers to have fun and enjoy the game, says Jill Thomas, Chief Marketing Officer for PGA Tour Superstore. With 45 golf courses in the Raleigh-Durham region, we have been wanting to expand to this community for several years and look forward to opening in July, she says. The lease transaction for the PGA Tour Superstore was named the Top Retail Lease in Triangle Business Journal Space Awards. The contract is valued at $7.6 million. PGA Tour Superstore is headquartered in Atlanta and has 70 store locations, according to its website. It plans to grow to more than 100 locations by 2026. Advance Auto stock tanks on earnings miss. Advance Auto Parts reported poor first-quarter earnings results May 31, sending its share price plummeting to its lowest level in years. The retailer, with its headquarters at Raleigh's North Hills, has slashed its guidance and reduced its dividend. We expect the competitive dynamics we faced in the first quarter to continue, resulting in a shortfall to our 2023 expectations, said CEO Tom Greco, who will retire at the year's end. The stock was at $239.88 on December 31, 2021, but was at $112.26 on May 17. It closed at $65.59 on June 5. Advance Auto's main competitors, O'Reilly's Automotive and AutoZone, beat analyst estimates in the first quarter. Analysts point to underlying structural issues as the cause of Advance's problem. Adjusted operating income for the quarter, $90 million, was down 56% compared to last year. And finally, restaurant partners with Maker's Mark. Peck and Plume, the restaurant and bar inside the Maiton Hotel in Cary, has partnered with Maker's Mark to make a private selection bourbon. Peck and Plume opened in 2021 and features swank decor and a modern American menu. The team traveled to the Maker's Mark distillery in Kentucky to work with the company. The team chose wood staves, including virgin American oak and seared French cuvée, as finishers for the bourbon. The staves are added to fully matured cask strength bourbon to provide more than 1,000 different taste combinations while aging for an additional 9 weeks. The bourbon will be available at the restaurant's bar starting June 16. And now we turn to the On Real Estate page, written by Kaylee Thompson. Toll Brothers targets Chapel Hill project. Home builder plans to add apartments and some townhomes. A national home builder is bringing hundreds of residences, including affordable units, to Chapel Hill. Toll Brothers Apartment Living is partnering with Rockwood Development Group to develop 318 apartments and 24 townhomes on Barbie Chapel Road near Highway 54 and the Mason Farm Biological Reserve. 23 of the apartment units will be offered to people making 60% of the area's median income. Site plans show the apartments will be spread across three buildings ranging from 3 to 5 stories. About 22 will be studios, 188 will be one bedrooms, 95 will be two bedrooms, and 13 will be three bedrooms. The townhomes will be in 4 3-story buildings. The affordable units will have a similar ratio of unit mix as the market rate apartments and the same exterior and interior finishes. The cost for the development is unknown as Toll Brothers did not respond to multiple inquiries. A traffic impact analysis completed in April stated the residences would be fully complete and occupied in 2024. Nearby, the Morgan at Chapel Hill apartments start at $1,738 a month for a one-bedroom and $2,084 for a two-bedroom. On the other side of Highway 54, Bell Meadowmount apartments rent for around $1,900 for a one-bedroom and $2,100 for a two-bedroom. Community amenities in the new project include a large central green space for events and activities, a swimming pool with sun shelf and sun lounge, outdoor cooking and dining areas, a flex lawn, an oak tree alley, pollinator gardens, a dog park, and a 10-foot-wide multimodal path along Barbie Chapel Road. The community at 5101 Barbie Chapel Road will be solar ready, have all electric interiors, all LED interior and exterior lighting, and programmable thermostats. There will be 446 parking spaces and EV charging stations. The property was rezoned from R2 to R6, allowing for the increased density. It's an assemblage of 11 lots that totals 11.5 acres. The site, which sits in Durham County, has 18 buildings, mostly single-family homes, on site that will be demolished. Chapel Hill has been ripe with residential development. A $150 million project with up to 567 units is planned for where Interstate 401 meets Highway 501. And high-end condos and estate lots are being planned as two different projects by Zinn Brothers Construction. Highwoods sells RTP building to grow capital. Highwoods Properties of Raleigh recently sold a medical office building in Research Triangle Park for $20.7 million as it focuses on funding its development pipeline. Highwoods sold the River Birch building to an LLC with a Boston address linked to Fidelity Investments on May 25, according to Durham County deed records. The LLC made an all-cash transaction to purchase the building, which is fully leased by Duke Health. The building at 4709 Creekstone Drive is 60,000 square feet and sits on 5 acres off Page Road near Interstate 40. The property has an assessed value of $13.6 million. Brendan Morana, Executive Vice President and Chief Financial Officer for Highwoods, says the company sold the building along with another office property in Tampa for $19.5 million to secure capital to invest in its development pipeline. The company has about $330 million left to fund in that pipeline. Project could mean 10-story buildings. A development with up to 300,000 square feet of commercial space and up to 10 stories is advancing in a fast-growing part of Cary. Capital Commercial LLC of Raleigh has filed new site plans with the town of Cary for its Alston Commons development along Highway 55 across from the Alston Town Center. The company filed a rezoning in October 2022, though at the time the developer wasn't listed on the application. The site plans show a mixed-use development that will include up to 625 multifamily units, a 30,000-square-foot car wash with gas station, up to 60,000 square feet of medical office space, up to 200,000 square feet of office space, and up to 25,000 square feet of general commercial space. And finally, Raleigh issues RFP for small lots downtown. The city of Raleigh has put out a new request for proposals for 0.24 acres along East Cabarrus and Southeast Streets and 0.12 acres nearby on South Bloodworth Street. The proposals would be for rentals where at least 20% of the units must be for people making no more than 60% of the area's median income. The lots at 414 and 416 East Cabarrus Street and 504 Southeast Street are zoned residential mixed use up to three stories. The 424 and 428 South Bloodworth Street properties are zoned for downtown mixed use up to three stories and have a combined assessed value of $260,000. And our final reporter page is the On Business News, written by Uma Bhatt. The first headline, huge apex project about to rise. Charlotte firm leads project at intersections of Highways 64 and 751. A massive development on the western edge of Apex is about to rise as the developers plan future phases. Beacon Partners of Charlotte says the Apex Gateway project is set to break ground soon. The more than 1 million square foot development will have a first phase anchored by three light industrial buildings totaling 480,000 square feet. Plans also call for life sciences and medical office space. Walker Gorman, who leads Beacon's expansion efforts in the Triangle, says that with the industrial space will likely come a demand for retail options in the future. That would be anything from strip retail, food and beverage, restaurant, and quick service restaurant in particular, he says. The developers expect to have more than 50,000 square feet of retail space. Apex Gateway spans more than 380 acres at the intersection of U.S. Highway 64 and NC Highway 751 on the Chatham side of the Chatham-Wake County border. The first phase is slated for completion in third quarter 2024. It includes the new headquarters facility for Durham Coca-Cola Bottling Company, totaling 172,150 square feet. The company is consolidating its operations, and its facility in Durham is set to be redeveloped. Beacon Partners anticipates starting on the second phase of the project in the fall of 2024. Gorham says that though the retail space will initially be curated for smaller service-oriented businesses and restaurants, the scope will expand as the project matures. Ultimately, as we get through subsequent phases of the project, we anticipate there being anchored retail, fitness, and the like, he says. Gorman declines to disclose a capital investment figure for Apex Gateway. Al Williams and Matt Winter of JLL are handling leasing for the speculative developments at Apex Gateway. The project team also includes general contractor The Conlin Company, Hager Smith Design as architect, and Advanced Civil Design as project engineer. Truist is providing construction financing. The developers are working with the town of Apex to master plan a trail network and curated green space, Gorham says. The project adds to the rapid pace of development in western Wake and eastern Chatham counties, which is being accelerated by manufacturers like Wolfspeed and VinFast planning huge operations in Chatham. Lack of charging stations remains a barrier. North Carolina is attracting major investments in the electric vehicle space, and the number of registered EVs in the state is on the rise, but the lack of charging stations continues to be a barrier to widespread EV adoption. There were more than 12,000 battery-run electric vehicles registered across Chatham, Durham, Orange, and Wake counties as of last year, including 8,600 in Wake County alone. For the state, the figure was above 25,000. At the same time, there are hundreds of charging stations sprinkled across Raleigh, Durham, Cary, Chapel Hill, and the other towns in the Triangle, according to data from Charge Hub. But outside of urban areas, charging stations become much more scattered. For example, there are just a handful in Johnston County. Meanwhile, not all charging stations can service every type of electric vehicle, another challenge for consumers. And finally, Cary Investor backs FinTech in Wilmington. A Wilmington fintech will expand in the coming months using a $3 million Series A round backed by co-founders Capital of Cary alongside existing investors Live Oak Ventures and Venture South. Approve is a software-as-a-service solution that allows equipment manufacturers and distributors to integrate financing into every point of an equipment buyer's process. The company, founded in 2014 by CEO Robert Preville, plans to hire 40 to 50 workers as it looks to expand its headquarters. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the Viewpoint page to read the editor's notebook, written by Sugata Mukherjee, editor-in-chief of the Triangle Business Journal. The headline, Live Golf, Its Players Win Big with PGA Tour Merger. June 6 has long been remembered for the D-Day invasion. The invasion changed the course of World War II. Nearly 160,000 Allied troops landed in Normandy, 73,000 U.S. soldiers that day. The troops faced about 50,000 German soldiers. In the end, a total of 4,414 Allied troops were killed on D-Day itself, including 2,501 Americans, according to reports. More than 5,000 were wounded. In the ensuing Battle of Normandy, the death toll of the Allied forces increased to 73,000 and more than 150,000 were wounded. The mission for this invasion was clear: liberate Europe from Nazi occupation. Today, we remember the day as a day of sacrifice, moral integrity, resolve, and a fight where good prevailed over evil. Now fast forward 79 years to June 6, 2023. While the event that transpired a few days ago is minuscule compared to the 1944 event, it allowed me to reflect on and compare an event that lacked integrity, reeked of moral turpitude, and caved to the almighty dollar. It's the merger between the PGA Tour, LIV Golf, and the European Tour. In business, mergers inevitably result in workers losing their jobs, executives being pushed out, and eventually one of the CEOs leaving after a short tenure. Those are all known factors. As hard as it may sound, in order to produce strong companies, a cultured workforce, and a growing shareholder value, mergers are necessary in the corporate world. But the way PGA Tour Commissioner Jay Monahan went about secretly cutting a deal with the Saudi government entity PIF, an entity that started the competing LIV Tour, was far from courageous and transparent. The players of the PGA Tour make the tour, and they were never informed of such a merger. They heard the news at the same time we did. What makes this merger different from a typical merger is that LIV was actively courting PGA players to jump ship in exchange for millions of dollars. Monahan, in return, was preaching the value of tradition, legacy, history, and honor to keep the players from jumping ship. Most of the PGA players trusted Monahan, including players such as Tiger Woods, John Rahm, and Rory McIlroy, who collectively were promised more than $1 billion from LIV, according to media reports. The merger now means the players who left the PGA Tour for the millions offered by the LIV Tour will now have their cake and eat it too. They will be led back into the PGA Tour at some point in the near future, and the vast number of members, players of the tour who decided not to leave the tour would be left wondering how to trust anyone in a leadership position moving forward. Unequivocally, LIV and the Saudis won. Players who defected to LIV are tens and hundreds of millions of dollars richer. Players of the PGA Tour lost the gamble, but not its leader, Monahan. His golden parachute is waiting, although he is unlikely to keep his job, even if he was named the CEO of the new entity. I brought up and compared two drastically different same-day events because it's a stark example of how decisions have lasting consequences and how history treats those decisions. D-Day will forever be remembered as an act to save the good in humanity. The other event that just happened, I don't know, and perhaps I shouldn't care, but ignorance and apathy may just be appropriate. One can never underestimate the power of money when it comes to decision-making by humans. Would AI have done the same? And now we'll read some of the big number sections that are sprinkled throughout the Triangle Business Journal. The first one is $1 million plus. That's how much the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission says Marshall Melton of Greensboro bilked investors out of through a scheme that targeted investors in property in downtown Laurinburg. On May 30, the SEC said Melton convinced seven investors, primarily seniors, to invest between $1 million and $1.5 million, but instead he used some of the money on personal expenses. $15.5 million. That's the combined total secured by Titan Medical through two recent deals. The medical device company landed $7.5 million in a license agreement with Intuitive Surgical and $8 million through a separate agreement with Medtronic. And the next big number is 1984. That's when the first branded hotel opened in Cary, a Best Western. The building is now set to be demolished to make way for a new hotel. The property's owners, local group CMC Hotels, wants to replace it with a 124-room Residence Inn. $100 million. That's how much an Aura brand apartment project will cost in Chapel Hill's Blue Hill District. Trinzic Residential Group plans to build Aura South Elliott, a 330-unit community with retail space and a connected parking deck. And our last big number is 534. That's the number of level 2 and 3 electric vehicles charging stations registered across Raleigh, Durham, Chapel Hill, and Cary, according to Charge Hub. And now we'll read from the He Said It and She Said It sections sprinkled throughout the Triangle Business Journal. The first is Norris Tolson, the CEO of the Carolinas Gateway Partnership on electric vehicle battery makers, eyeing the Kingsboro CSX Select megasite near Rocky Mount. Almost everything that's looking at our megasite is a billion plus. They're all very large, $1 billion plus, and 1,000 plus jobs or more. Domus Diagnostics CEO Paul Chapman has this quote on plans to develop a low-cost at-home diagnostic test for multiple infectious diseases. The startup, spun out of Duke University, recently landed a $2.4 million grant from the National Institutes of Health to advance its testing platform to clinical trials. The foundation of the company was built on accessible testing. Next, we have Damon Butler, founder of Triangle Restaurant Week and president of creative branding firm Triangle Boulevard. The summer edition of Triangle Restaurant Week runs through June 11th and with more than 50 establishments participating. With over 50 restaurants participating, it should help drive revenue to the local restaurants. And our last quote is from Joey Brem of Golden Hour Collective LLC. Brem is on a team of developers for the proposed River Muse subdivision in Clayton. The town council has pushed for more executive-style housing in the community. What's been built in the past here doesn't represent what some of the new income levels may be coming in. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the Business Pulse Survey. The question for this edition is, do you own or plan to buy an electric vehicle? Total number of responses were 118. 42% said don't own one and never will. 31% say they're waiting for the cost to come down. 16% say I plan to buy one. And 11% say I already own one. And while we have some seconds left, we're going to go ahead and stop right there with our reading of today of the Triangle Business Journal. We've run out of time for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The Triangle Business Journal is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. So long until next time, and thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.